Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Our Father's Day program is going to focus heavily on playing it safe and protecting yourselves and your loved ones from harm all summer long. We're going to start it off with the Red Cross to brief us on the latest hurricane and storm season outlook. We'll also bring you some preparedness tips and opportunities for you to give back as a disaster volunteer or even more critically, as a blood or platelet donor. Then we'll bring in a representative from AAA Northeast, covering a lot of ground as we discuss the 100 deadliest days. Pedestrian, motorcycle, and bicyclist safety, hot car dangers, and even fake car safety seats. Then we're going to continue our Pride Month in Focus series, welcoming back Greater Bridgeport Pride to celebrate their 15th anniversary and to chat about the Pride Month activities still to come in and around the Park City this June and how this organization is growing and adapting to the needs of the LGBTQ plus community across the region. But first, as we said, happy Father's Day. Dad deserves to feel the love today, so why not give him a day as special as he is? From dining ideas to outdoor activities for the family, the Connecticut Tourism Office and our regional tourism districts are flush with great ways to guide and plan a fantastic Father's Day. Let someone else do the cooking and take Dad out for a fabulous meal. Treat him to a favorite drink for a relaxing Father's Day at home or on the inviting grounds of a local vineyard, distillery, or brewery, or just get outdoors together as a family. All you need to put your Father's Day plan in motion is to click on CTVisit. All right. Well, happy Father's Day to all again. We're kicking off Father's Day with a mom who's celebrating her child's first birthday. So glad to have our friend Jocelyn Hillard back. She's with the Communications Office at American Red Cross for Connecticut and Rhode Island. And Jocelyn, welcome to the program. We appreciate you being part of it this morning and helping kick off summer with some really important information and some opportunities for folks to give back in many different ways to help keep their communities healthy and on track and safe. So first of all, happy birthday to the little one, and we hope that your Father's Day weekend is going to be great.
Oh, thank you, and happy Father's Day to all listening.
So let's start off talking about the critical need for blood right now here at the beginning of the summer. This is, a traditional period where things drop off because everybody's thinking about everything else, right?
Yeah, changes to the blood supply can happen at any instant. And traditionally during this time of year, we know it's busy and people might be focused more on graduation or vacations or just kind of switching into that summer mindset. But it's important to remember that the need for blood is constant. Our patients rely on that blood, whether it be for routine surgeries, expected surgeries, or crises that we can't predict. So if you are able to, please make that blood donation appointment at a location near you. You can do that at redcrossblood.org.
Very good. Now, we talk about preparedness a lot and tap you and your organization for reinforcement, tips, ideas, resources. We know that, obviously, like many people, folks like you at the American Red Cross follow the weather and trending, but you also, kind of plan on how to devote your resources depending on some predictions. You've already issued the big hurricane season warning message, but we haven't gotten to talk to you much over the past month since that was issued. What are a couple things that you're hearing or seeing from your weather sources that kind of help put energy behind the messages and tips that you're trying to deliver?
Thank you. Yeah, so hurricane season officially began on June 1st, and it lasts through the end of November 30th. So that's a huge window for there to be a potential for a hurricane here in Connecticut. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration predicted that there could be 13 to 19 strong storms that to be named. And I think what's important to look at outside of those numbers is that it only takes one powerful storm to create that overwhelming devastation. And not only can hurricanes cause problems in the immediate coastal areas, which is what we think about, but it can also cause damage hundreds of miles inland. So if there were to be a large hurricane that came through our state, we know that it could affect everyone. So it's important that you're taking the steps now as a family, as a community, to really put some thought into, if something were to happen, what is our plan? What do we need to do now to prepare? And what can we do to put those into action?
So what are a couple of the most important or most critical things that people should be thinking about and doing to be prepared?
Absolutely. So your evacuation plan should be the first thing that you think about. So knowing where you're going to go, how you'll get there, and where you'll stay. So if you are in a situation in which you need to evacuate quickly, such as going to a shelter or maybe to another location outside of the immediate area, think about what's most important to you every day. So not only is it that classic food, water, but also those emergency plans, any of your medications, anything specific that you might need for your family, whether it be special food or pet supplies. So really think about what you need the most day to day. What are the things you're grabbing for? What are the things that you rely on to have a healthy day? And pack that and make a plan for, if we didn't have it, how can we get extra to put in our bag? Under the same, as you're thinking about these things, also think about, if I needed to stay at home for at least 3 days without access to water, gas, phone, or internet, again, what are those supplies that you rely on every single day? Get the paperwork ready, get your water supplies, your food, and really just have that good peace of mind. You definitely don't want to be going to the grocery store the morning of a storm. Even just think about what it's like when there's a winter storm. There's limited access to those basic necessities. So you want to do that now so you don't have to worry about that, but put your focus towards your family.
Yeah. And I guess while the focus is on hurricane season, as we've seen here tragically in Connecticut as recently as within the past year, it doesn't take a hurricane to tragically cost us lives and millions, if not billions of dollars in property damage. These storms can really be looking like they're moving pretty quickly and then suddenly stall, like the one that we had last year that caused all that devastation throughout the greater Naugatuck Valley and other parts of the state.
Yes, you are absolutely right. So that kind of goes back to, we don't always need to be thinking that we're just waiting out that huge storm. We know that we have a lot of infrastructure such as trees that could easily take out power for a few days on end. So a lot of that same stuff with creating your evacuation plan and creating your emergency kit all apply to any type of disaster that we're going through, be it a summertime or a winter storm, power outage, like we mentioned. I also want to add that we encourage you to sign up for free emergency alerts, not only from the American Red Cross. We have an emergency app that you can download on your phone that provides weather alerts, packing tips, first aid safety, but also what are the alerts from your local government should there be an emergency, and what are those very local reliable sources that you have?
Yeah, I guess many communities, if not all of them here in Connecticut, have some sort of community exclusive or more hyper local regional ways that they can communicate where the shelters are, where the open avenues of access and exit are, if people need to get in and out, closed roads, and even maybe messages about what types of businesses, restaurants, or other service locations are open.
Yes, and it's important that you not only know what's going on in your town, how to communicate with your emergency management team, but also what are some potential neighbors or family members in the area that might need a little extra attention or support should there be an emergency. You know, it's always important that we're taking care of our neighbors. So I know that it's a lot to think about. But if nothing else, we ask that you take this call to action today to put together that preparedness kit and have that conversation with the ones closest to you of what's our emergency plan, our evacuation plan. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of taking care of our neighbors, as we've already talked about, the Red Cross makes it easy to be a blood or platelet donor by utilizing their blood services division and the resources that they can provide you via app or online. We do encourage blood donors to get busy here in the beginning of the summer when donation trends tend to drop a little bit and the need tends to grow. But there are also other opportunities, especially in situations like we're talking about right now, horrible storms, tragedies, hurricanes, and other disasters. The Red Cross would love to have you as a disaster services volunteer.
Yes. So we talk about, and I'm sure you've seen on the news, our volunteers who go out to different parts of the country to help with that disaster response that might require 2 or 3 weeks of their time to go out. But we always appreciate our volunteers who are able to do that and give that time, but we know that's not realistic for everyone. So we are always looking for disaster action team volunteers who live right here in our area, who are able to help us respond to our local home fires, providing care and comfort to people who have experienced those everyday tragedies. We respond to, on average, 2 home fires every day across the state. So we have volunteers who are working around the clock to ensure our neighbors are getting that support. So if you're interested in doing anything in the disaster field, please visit redcross.org/volunteer. We have many positions that are in person, virtual. We'll work with your schedule. We're really just looking for those compassionate community members to join our team and help out others.
Sure. And as you pointed out, occasionally, I get probably more than occasionally, the Connecticut and Rhode Island Red Cross volunteers are tapped to do travel if they're able to and inclined, and really provide important and fortifying resources at many other places across the country.
Yes, yes. We are very proud that we have many volunteers in our area that raise their hand to help out across the country. That does require training. Obviously, we want to make sure that if you are taking on an assignment in an area that you don't know, that you feel equipped and have the resources to do that successfully and confidently. So that's why we encourage anyone who is interested in doing those national deployments that you sign up now so that you can take the training and get comfortable and familiar so you're ready for when that time comes.
And speaking of training, that is the sort of the other leg of the three-legged stool of the American Red Cross in terms of blood donations, disaster preparedness, and making sure that anybody that is interested is ready for many different kinds of issues, disasters, or concerns. You guys offer trainings for organizations like businesses and clubs and things like that on various programs, including first aid, CPR, and AED training?
Yes, we offer a wide variety of life-saving training, including AED, CPR, first aid, babysitting courses. And it's very important. I know that I've met people along the way who may have taken training back in high school or many years ago, but we do encourage you to stay up to date with your training, to continue to practice those skills, to be aware of your surroundings, because you just never know when you might need to just step into action. And we encourage everyone to feel that confidence should an emergency arise, and know what to do, including you as an individual, but also the steps it would take to call emergency personnel. So we encourage you to take a Red Cross CPR class or whatever might be best for you. You can do that at redcross.org. There are many different types of options: in person, virtual, hybrid. So, you know, here's one more call to action. The theme of the day today is to be prepared, be safe, and be ready. So we encourage you to take those steps now.
Very good. From babysitting and childcare to lifeguarding, swimming and water safety, ALS and PALS training, as well as AED and other trainings for you and your fellow workers or club members, scout troops, and others, opportunities to volunteer for disaster services or just to give the gift of life by donating blood or platelets, the American Red Cross is there for you, and they are easy to find at redcross.org. We're pleased, as always, to chat with our friends from American Red Cross of Connecticut and Rhode Island, and Jocelyn Hillard is often that point person. Jocelyn, thank you very much for being part of the program this morning. We hope we have a safe summer, and that the next time we talk, we can be reflecting on the fact that it wasn't too bad of a summer hurricane and storm season. So I look forward to chatting with you again sometime in the fall or early winter to bring people some more tips about how the Red Cross can continue to be of service to them year round here in Connecticut and Rhode Island. So thank you so much. All right, time to switch to safety and taking good care of yourself and the others who share the road with you, and also touching on a number of other concerns that are in focus right now with AAA Northeast. We're so pleased to welcome back their spokesperson, Lauren Fabrizi. We always like to have extended chats with folks like Lauren because their agencies cover so many different issues and keep their finger on the pulse of all things happening under the umbrella of AAA. But first, we want to remind you that it's also Men's Health Month, and in recognition of Men's Health Month, the Center for Cancer Care at Griffin Hospital in Derby and the Health Initiative for Men are hosting a free prostate cancer screening from 3 to 5 p.m. on Thursday, June 26th. The screening is sponsored by HIM, which encourages men to see their physician annually and empowers them to actively manage their health by being screened for various diseases that respond better to treatment if detected early. It's all about early detection, guys. The screenings will take 10 to 15 minutes. Space for the free screenings is limited, however, so why don't you make this an extra special Father's Day and remind Dad, not only is early detection important, but so is early registration for this event. If you'd like to learn more, you can call Griffin Hospital at 203-732-1280 or visit griffinhealth.org. All right, Lauren, good morning. Happy. I hope you're celebrating a happy Father's Day so far for any father in your world.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, and you as well.
So I guess the first thing we need to tackle is a serious subject, because no dad or mom or anyone wants to have that phone call or that knock on the door at any hour of the day or night telling them that some sort of tragic thing has happened with their teenager or young driver, pedestrian or cyclist. We are a couple weeks into the 100 deadliest days, or so it is referred to, because of the intense spike in dangerous crashes and sadly deaths related to various types of behavior out on our roadways. Let's talk a little bit about that to get things started.
Yeah, absolutely. For many teenagers, summertime brings fun and festivities, and we've seen a lot of the local high schools, they've got their graduation. So, we're expecting a lot of graduation parties to pop up for the teens. But unfortunately, as more teens take to the roads during summer break, the risk of teen driver crashes increases. The 100 deadliest days, as you had mentioned, it's the period between Memorial Day and Labor Day when fatal crashes involving teen drivers are the highest. So when we take a look at data from 2019 to 2023, more than 7,100 teen drivers were killed in traffic crashes nationwide, and more than 31% of those fatalities occurred from Memorial Day to Labor Day, and that's according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And what's even more concerning is that the number of teen drivers killed during the 100 deadliest days in 2023, which is the last year of available federal data, that number was almost 35% higher than in 2019 pre-pandemic. And we took a look at some local data too from the Connecticut Crash Data Repository. So in Connecticut from 2020 to 2023, there were more than 100 fatal crashes involving teen drivers, which sadly claimed the lives of around 20 teens, and over 38% of those crashes occurred from Memorial Day to Labor Day. So kind of just puts it into perspective, you can see just how much more dangerous the roads become for everyone, including teens.
This summer and these days that we're in right now, as we're talking with schools winding down and graduations happening and younger students coming back from college and reacquainting with family and friends, they're getting back out on the road and maybe paying more attention to everything that they shouldn't be. Are there any guidance or tips that AAA offers that might help remind or keep people in a little bit better in line as they're out there operating on the roads this summer?
Absolutely. According to our AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, things like speeding, texting, and running red lights, those are all top contributors to unsafe driving among teens. And it's important for young drivers to note that cars full of friends can be dangerous too. AAA research shows that teen drivers involved in crashes are twice as likely to die when transporting two or more teen passengers compared to when driving alone. And according to our AAA research, talking or interacting with passengers is actually the most common distracting behavior in teen driver crashes, and then that's followed by cell phone use. So we can't stress enough to ditch the distractions. It's also incredibly important for teens to buckle up, because NHTSA data shows that seatbelt use is the lowest among teens and young adults. And we also know that people are less likely to be restrained when impaired. Another important reminder, obey the speed limit. We have seen so many instances of people speeding on our major highways lately. I mean, if we've been out there on I-95 and I-91, we've probably all, had those reckless drivers speeding right behind us. I know me personally, I'm thinking like, oh my goodness, this person is really going to hit me in the back. He or she's going so fast. But, we're talking about speeds over 100 miles per hour, right? So remember that faster speeds rob drivers of the extra reaction time needed to avoid a crash. And inexperience behind the wheel makes speeding especially dangerous for younger drivers. We also just want the teens to be well rested before a day of festivities. Again, we've been talking about they're likely going to be going to all these graduation parties. We've been seeing all the proms that have been taking place. So you want to make sure that you head home before exhaustion hits, or make a plan with friends to spend the night in a safe place so that you avoid driving drowsy. We know that drowsy driving can be just as dangerous as impaired driving. It just doesn't have the same stigma behind it.
Sure.
And of course, it's illegal for people under the age of 21 to consume alcohol. But if you've consumed alcohol or drugs, you know, please make sure that you give your keys to a sober friend, you use a rideshare service to get home safely. And we also have a message for parents, too. This summer break, we just want parents to model safe driving behaviors and remind their teens that reckless driving puts everyone on the road at risk. Whether you're a new or experienced driver, road safety is a shared responsibility. So we just want everyone to make smart decisions behind the wheel, because one bad decision can be life-altering. Mm.
And the improper operation of cars and trucks and SUVs also creates a significant ripple effect when it comes to pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorcycle riders. And operators as well. And we here at For the People have been trying to drive the message home, if you will, regarding pedestrian and bicyclist safety, thanks to the tips that have been delivered to us through your office, Lauren. Let's just take a quick minute or two to brief people on reminders for pedestrian, motorcycle, and bicyclist safety.
Absolutely. New research from our AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety reveals that pedestrian deaths have gone up over 80% in the past 15 years. So to put that in perspective, the number of pedestrian fatalities in the U.S. was around 4,100 in 2009. That's when the number of pedestrian deaths reached a historic low. That number climbed to over 7,300 in 2023. And again, 2023 is the last year of available federal data. So that means that a pedestrian is killed around every 72 minutes across the U.S. So some safety tips for drivers: you just want to be on the lookout for pedestrians at all times, use extra caution when driving in hard to see conditions, such as at night or in bad weather, and slow down and be prepared to stop when turning or entering a crosswalk. Yield, of course, to pedestrians in crosswalks. And you want to stop well back from the crosswalk to help other drivers see any pedestrians that may be there. And never pass vehicles stopped at a crosswalk, because there may be people crossing that are out of your sight. Of course, follow the speed limit, especially near people on the street and in school zones. Of course, school is letting out for the end of the school year. But obviously a good reminder when those big yellow school buses are back on the road come the fall. Sure. And you just want to be extra cautious when backing up and looking for pedestrians, you know, especially when you're backing out of your driveway or in big shopping centers. Never drive distracted or under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And then for pedestrians, you know, we just want to make sure that they follow all of the rules of the road as well, and obey all traffic signs and signals. Walk on the sidewalk if they're available. If there are no sidewalks, you want to walk facing traffic and as far from traffic as possible. Cross the street at crosswalks or intersections when you can, and look for cars in all directions. If a crosswalk or intersection is not available, you want to try to locate a well-lit area where you have the best view of traffic, and wait for a gap in traffic that allows enough time to cross safely. And of course, continue watching for traffic as you cross. And then finally, it's just a good idea to try to make eye contact with drivers to indicate your next move, that you want to cross, and never cross between parked cars.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lauren. I want to circle back to a couple of things related to our innocent children and pets who can't really take care of themselves if they are riding in cars with their parents, loved ones, owners, or caregivers. There is a spike, I guess, or an uptrend in tragic deaths of children and pets in hot cars last summer, and we don't want to see a repeat of that spike this year.
That's right. On average, 37 children across the U.S. die each year after being left in a hot car. You mentioned, you know, the spike that we've been seeing last year. 39 children nationwide died in hot cars, and that's up a staggering 35% from the year before, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And it looks like that so far this year, there have unfortunately already been 6 deaths associated with children being left in hot cars. So it's important to remember that vehicular heat stroke can happen very quickly. The inside of a car can become lethally hot even on a mild but sunny day. So on a typical 80-degree summer day, the interior temperature of a car climbs by 20 degrees in only 10 minutes and reaches 109 degrees in 20 minutes. On hotter days, the interior temperature can reach 120 to 140 degrees. And it's important to remember that cracking the windows really has little effect. So although most hot car deaths occur when temperatures are above 80 degrees, in each of the past 11 years, children have died of vehicular heat stroke when the inside of the car was only 70 to 80 degrees.
Mm. And you also made a very brief but important point. We're not just talking about infants and very young kids or pets. We're talking even older kids who may, you know, beg and ask and wail that they want to stay in the car while, you know, mom or dad or grandma or grandpa go into the store. You can't give in and leave them in the car unattended in any temperature. Really, and same with our beloved pets.
Right, because sometimes that happens when caregivers leave kids in the car because they think they're going to run a quick errand, whether it's, you know, themselves that just thinks, all right, I'll just leave them in there for a little bit. Or like you said, you know, maybe it's an older child that's begging, no, I don't want to come into the store with you. Sure. I want to stay in the car. What we do know from looking at some statistics is that over 52% of hot car deaths are caused by a caregiver forgetting the child in the car. And 29% of the deaths related to kids being forgotten in the car actually involve a caregiver that's other than a parent. Nearly 22% of deaths take place when a caregiver knowingly leaves a child in the car, like you and I were just talking about, and that's typically to run a quick errand or let the child finish a nap, maybe. And nearly 25% of cases are related to the child getting inside the car without adult supervision, and then as a result becoming trapped in the car. So it's, you know, we want to make sure that folks are always locking your car to prevent unsupervised access and a child getting trapped inside, and keep, you know, car keys away from the children, and teach them that the inside of a car should never be used as a play area. Sometimes, you know, we see that they want to play hide and go seek, and then, you know, they end up in the car, but then they end up getting trapped. And then unfortunately they're not found in time.
Yeah. Tragedies happen. Also, let's stick with the inside of the car for just a couple more minutes that we have with you this morning, Lauren. I know you're not the, the AAA Northeast point expert on this, but you do have some words of advice regarding fake car seats that are being found in our vehicles around the area?
Yes, that's right. And we do have several certified child passenger safety technicians across our AAA Northeast territory, including my colleague Adele right here in Connecticut. So anyone, you know, needs help installing a car seat properly, if they're not quite sure what to do, if they've got it installed, they've got a newborn on the way, and they want to make sure that it's in there properly, we can certainly help you out with that. But yes, so to your point here with scams, so we all love a good deal, but deals that seem too good to be true, well, sometimes they often are. So in recent years, counterfeit and unsafe car seats and harnesses being sold online, that has become more prevalent, unfortunately. And when that happens, children are put at risk when parents unknowingly buy a knockoff that isn't crash tested. Bogus seats typically look almost identical to genuine seats, But a close inspection will usually reveal some red flags. So we're talking about things like flimsy plastic, lack of crash-absorbing padding or low-grade belts, weak clasps and clips, and those all put children at risk, and they're less safe there. So to determine whether a seat is real or counterfeit, you want to remember that genuine seats come with a detailed instruction booklet and registration card, usually tucked inside a compartment or placed on the seat itself in the shipping box. Also, all car seats approved for use in the U.S. are clearly marked with regulatory compliance and safety information labels. Approved seats are required to list the manufacturer and date of manufacture and often include an expiration date. Also, newer seats, sometimes they include QR codes now that will actually take you to the manufacturer's website. Seats should also include a sticker that states, this child restraint system conforms to all applicable federal motor vehicle standards, as well as a date of manufacture and often an expiration date again. So those are just things that you want to be on the lookout when you get your car seat to make sure that it has all of that inside. Also, all car seats sold in the U.S. are required to have a three-point harness. And then another thing too, you know, if you ordered something, you're like, you know what, that was a really good deal. I don't know now. You want to be sure to check every label in the box for maybe misspellings, off-center, odd-looking text, or you know, incorrect use of the English language, possibly caused by poor translation. And if you're still uncertain, you can try to get in touch with the manufacturer, provide the serial number, and ask for help confirming whether the seat is real or fake.
Very good. Lauren Fabrizi is a spokesperson for the Public Affairs Division of AAA Northeast. If you want to learn more about any of the subjects that we are talking about on this program, or they would love for you to visit them to review a raft of summer road travel tips and air travel tips, if you're doing travel this summer, you can go to AAANortheast.com to get started. And Lauren, in the meantime, have a good, happy, and safe summer. And thank you so much for all of these critical points of information in our chat this morning. Years is a special milestone, and even more so when it comes to Greater Bridgeport Pride. They have woven a rich tapestry of progress, unity, and resilience throughout the Greater Bridgeport community with remarkable achievements. Over these 15 years, they have served as a testament to the transformative power of art, social justice, compassion, and community, and we want you to be a part of it. Big 15th anniversary events coming up later in June, and we're going to talk all about it with our friend returning to the program, Jason Coombs from Greater Bridgeport Pride. We're going to get the lowdown on all of that, but we do also want to take an opportunity to take reach out for anyone who is feeling like they're ready for business success, or they need funding to take their small business or venture to the next level. Did you know that most banks and community lenders decline the majority of loan applications they receive? Well, Connecticut's Community Economic Development Fund can offer you free training that will prepare you to apply for one of the agency's funding opportunities. These free trainings are going to help you understand the process of getting a better loan, the right questions to ask yourself about your business concept, and CEDF can even connect you with an advisor on request. Lots of support if you want to get a business going or take an existing business to the next level, and you can get started now by visiting weteachsuccess.org. All right, Jason Coombs, welcome back to the program. How have you been?
Oh, I've been great. Thank you for asking, and thanks for having me again on the show, John. It's such a pleasure to chat with you, as always.
Yeah, so I guess the key question is, over these 15 years that Greater Bridgeport Pride has been building its coalition and allies throughout the region, have you been on this ride all the way back to the beginning?
Oh, I wish. Honestly, I wish that Greater Bridgeport Pride was around when I was a kid, because this is exactly what, you know, as a young queer kid, I would have needed and would have loved and would have, you know, took part of if it was available. But, you know, it wasn't around when I was a youngster here. So I moved back from New York City. I'm from Bridgeport originally, but I moved back to Connecticut from New York City in 2020 during the pandemic. And, you know, of course, was looking for community, looking for a place, looking for belonging. And I realized there was a Pride celebration here. And I never knew growing up that Bridgeport would one day have a Pride. You know, it was just a miraculous and inspiring and much needed thing for me to see that in my hometown. So I immediately, you know, went to the first one I could, which was in 2021 because of the pandemic. Mm. And 2022, and I joined the board and joined the committee to help plan. So I've been there for the last 3 years now.
Oh, okay.
My third year helping out officially. Yeah.
Well, that's plenty of time to be able to get an idea of the importance of an organization and the network of folks connected to an organization like Bridgeport Pride, because as you made the key statement there, when you were a young kid growing up queer, you didn't really have a place to go, a lot of folks who felt like you to turn to kind of, you know, get some validation and right, really reinforce your identity. Let's talk a little bit more broadly about organizations, not just Greater Bridgeport Pride, but all the ones across the state and nation like Greater Bridgeport Pride, and how today more than ever, they probably serve as one of the most important assets, right, and you know, places for folks in the LGBTQ plus world to turn to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we know there's such an attack on the LGBT community right now, specifically our trans friends and family, you know, Black trans women and whatnot. So I think places like Pride centers across the country are so important, because people need to have safety, need to feel safe, right? They need to have a place where they belong, where they can see people like them. They can get the support that they may not get from their families. You know, so having, you know, gender affirming care and having resources such as, you know, activities or you know, support groups, they're so needed for people who are in the queer community. As we know, like queer kids, you know, they have such a high rate of suicide, unfortunately, you know, because not everyone has a place like the Bridgeport Pride Center in their cities, in their towns, in their states. So I think it's so important to have that. I hope every city can have a Pride Center. You know, I think it's that important. Mm.
Well, when it comes to especially young people who are trying to discover their true selves, it seems so critically important that they be able to go somewhere and have a place, as you said, to feel safe. So,
like a chosen family, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that Greater Bridgeport Pride offers. You guys have like a weekly drop-in situation?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Bridgeport Pride Center is open, you know, Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to about 4 p.m. So anyone can drop in during those hours. But we also have special events and special times where it's open. So, like, there's different activities. You know, once or twice a month, we have a Friday night Pride hangout for, you know, kids and who want to just come watch a movie or do some arts and crafts or you know, anything that's kind of like a social type setting, right? We also have a book club that meets once a month. We have a music club that meets the first Tuesday of every month. You know, there's different support groups and recovery groups. We're working with Lighthouse to do more engagement and enrichment for children. You know, we have our food pantry that's open for anyone who needs, you know, during this time where a lot of people are struggling, you know, to have food that's available, you know, that's healthy and nutritious. They can come in and come and get that. You know, we have a gender affirming closet if someone's transitioning or needs, you know, clothes for a job interview or whatever that may be, whatever they need clothing for. We have that available. We've gotten so many donations over the last, you know, year or so. So that's open and available for people. You know, we officially cater to the LGBTQIA plus community, but we're not going to turn anyone away who needs support or access. You know, we have 2 computers in our center as well. If anybody needs help with, like, you know, getting online, trying to find a job, or, you know, any kind of support they need, we have it there.
Mm. Bridgeport and the region around it is also asset-rich when it comes to nonprofit organizations and other partners who I'm sure Greater Bridgeport Pride and the Pride Center work with in the event they suddenly intake folks that have unique challenges or issues, especially things like mental health, addiction, or other issues like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We always, you know, we have lots of partners that we work with. Specifically, Our Trans Life is another local nonprofit organization that focuses primarily on trans and non-binary youth. We're always working in tandem with them as well. Like, we also work with Circle Care Center and, you know, different pride organizations. Like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had a little dinner with New Haven folks at New Haven Pride and in Noah Circle Triangle Community Center. We all came together to share ideas and thoughts and how we can better unite and serve this greater Bridgeport and New Haven, you know, county.
Yeah, that's.
I love the synergy that we have going on with other local organizations as well.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about now, Jason, is circling the wagons, because I have to believe that there are a lot of younger people who are in the same position you were when you were their age, who may have been teetering on the edge, poised to come out or express their true selves, and now they've been kind of shoved back, or they have restrained themselves from expressing their truth because of the appearance of a dangerous climate that they're surrounded by.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a scary time. You know, we're seeing so many protections and safety measures being repealed across the country. And, you know, even, you know, funding is, you know, as we all know, is, you know, it's being taken away from LGBTQ organizations. That's why it's just so important for, you know, people to show up and support any way you can, because there's just so much, there's much vitriol being thrown to our community. And, you know, I think it's just it's a rough time right now. And I know, like, you know, LGBTQ plus community is not the only community that's suffering right now, you know, but I think all of our struggles are parallel, whether it's, you know, the undocumented folks, women who are facing persecution as well. You know, it's a scary time, but I think we have to really, you know, band together and have places like the Pride Center that are open for anybody with a kind and open heart that can come and be, can use our resources.
Yeah. Well, looking all the way back to the 60s and 70s, the LGBTQ plus community has always found the energy and the wherewithal to look into the face of adversity and find a way to celebrate as well, to celebrate themselves, to celebrate their allies and their communities. And things are no different during this 15th anniversary year of Greater Bridgeport Pride. You guys have a series of interconnecting events culminating with a really, really big and exciting activity coming up later this month. Let's talk a little bit about those Pride Month events that are going to be extra special in this 15th year of Bridgeport Pride.
Right. So, you know, the cornerstone, the staple of, you know, the Bridgeport Pride event is the Outworks, you know, art show, which was kind of where Bridgeport Pride started 15 years ago with Ricky Mestri, who is a local queer Latino artist who went to City Lights Gallery, Suzanne Kachmar, with this idea of doing a queer art show. And, you know, they put it on and it was, of course, successful. I think it was probably the first queer art show in the state of Connecticut. And that grew into a march that happens every year. And we've continued that trend of just kind of like building on those pieces of the foundation of Bridgeport Pride. So we're going to continue with the Outworks art show, which is, you know, mostly LGBTQIA plus some allies who may have wanted to contribute some art, which is going to be at City Lights, and it's opened at 12 o'clock on June 21st, the day of our Pride event. And then at 2 o'clock, we have our big march kickoff through the streets of downtown Bridgeport. We're hoping to get as many people as possible who want to march with us, who want to support us. Last year was our biggest attendance. We're trying to double that this year, you know, so we're hoping people come out and march through the streets of downtown Bridgeport, starting at the colorful Bridgeport Broad Street steps. And that makes our way downtown through downtown to Wheeler Park, which is right next to City Hall, where we have our big Unity in the Park event. It's the third year of us doing this Unity in the Park, where we have, you know, local vendors. We have like about 50 local vendors this year, local performers, and then we have, you know, like dunk. We have a dunk tank this year. We have family-friendly activities. We have a circus group for kids that will be like teaching kids how to do circus tricks. Mm. And then we have our live performers. We have a really cool headliner, Lucy LaDuca, who is a finalist on RuPaul's Drag Race. So we have that superstar there. We have some really passionate and engaging speakers, including our keynote speaker, activist and actor India Moore, who's going to be there as well. Just really getting people amped up and reminding people that, you know, Pride, like, as you said earlier, it did start as a riot, right? As it did start as a way to fight back against the way that LGBTQ people were treated, you know? So we want to remind people that we are not going to stand down. We are going to raise our voices. We're going to march through the streets of downtown Bridgeport. We're going to let people know that we're here, and as cheesy it may sound, that we're queer and we belong here, because we do. And, you know, queer people are important to the fabric of this city and this country, and we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, sharing your rightful place within all communities is really right. What we should all be steering toward these days, honestly, Jason. And we really appreciate the fact that an organization like Greater Bridgeport Pride is helping to make that happen right here with our listeners. And we hope folks will come out and support this. But the Unity in the Park may be ending at 8 p.m. There on the... on the 21st of June, but the that's when the real party starts.
Oh yeah, that's when we're gonna have our fun, amazing after party at Trevi Lounge, which is, you know, the local LGBTQ bar, which is in Fairfield, and we are going to, you know, be there as well, starting at, I think, 10 o'clock we go to. It's our official after party and goes to 1 a.m. And I think it's like a beach pool party theme. So we're going to have like a DJ, and there'll be like, there'll be more food trucks, because there'll be food trucks at Union in the Park, but there'll also be food trucks outside of Trevi. And I think there's going to be two DJs, and they just recently renovated their outdoor patio. So, you know, we're going to hope and pray that the weather is nice all day and all night, so we can be, you know, we can celebrate, you know, and keep the party going until 2 a.m. when the bar closes. It's gonna be a long day for us.
Yeah,
but a fun day.
And as we wrap up the conversation, we should reflect on not only the fact that Greater Bridgeport Pride is celebrating 15 years, but they're also representing their first ever thematic message. I am. Let's talk and close out the program, reminding people about I am.
Oh, yeah. So I am. It was a wonderful campaign that we started to remind people, because, you know, LGBTQ people, you know, are often not able to be themselves for so long. Right. And often our labels are placed upon us rather than us being able to share what we are and how we feel and what represents us, you know. So the I Am campaign is just a way of reclaiming ownership of who we are and saying, hey, I am blank. So, you know, I am a Black queer man, you know, I am from Bridgeport. I am proud to be part of this community. Whatever you are and want to share with the world, that's what the campaign represents. So we have this wonderful campaign where we have ambassadors that are out there sharing, you know, their words of encouragement and empowerment. Hopefully people see that and can, you know, be authentic in themselves as well based on this campaign.
Fantastic. Jason Coombs, a great spokesperson for a Greater Bridgeport Pride and the Pride Center there in Bridgeport, celebrating 15 years. You can learn more about what they do at bridgeportpride.com. They seek to raise awareness of the vibrant local LGBTQ plus community, to offer a platform for creative expression, and to connect the community to work opportunities for queer creatives and all others who are looking for a safe place where they can share who they are to the greater Bridgeport community. Jason, best of luck with the event, and thank you so much for being part of our Pride Month series again. We'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone.
Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs John Voquette. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.